Are you craving the taste of authentic Italian cuisine made from the freshest ingredients that doesn't break the bank? Look no further than Amando's Italian Kitchen in Radford, Virginia. I recently had the pleasure of tasting the most delicious calzone at Amando's. What I loved most was that they start preparing the food after I arrive. This ensures that it's fresh and flavorful. Located conveniently at 1154 East Main Street, Radford, Virginia, near Radford University. Amando's Italian Kitchen offers not just amazing food, but also a warm, friendly atmosphere. Put it this way, they're family-owned, and they treat you like family. Amando's Italian Kitchen, where good food meets great service. Welcome to Breaking Bread. I'm Terry Page. Security breaches, the nightmare of merchants and consumers alike. That's not news. It means Americans are hacked every day. The big story is the illusion given to consumers to what they should actually be looking for when it comes to protecting their personal information. An example of this is last month's breach of AT&T, where published reports led customers to believe this was only limited to the current and former customers of the third largest carrier. This and why the latest efforts to bundle your streaming service is more of a reason to make sure your data is protected when using these services. We break bread with offensive cybersecurity researcher Shadow as he offers some tips on how to keep your information safe and, more importantly, what to do once it's in the hands of the bad guy. Shadow, welcome to Breaking Bread.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, a lot going on as usual in the cybersecurity world, data breaches, privacy, this sort of thing. What I did notice that in the news currently, we're looking to get perhaps a merger, if you would, of streaming services. Well, it got me to thinking, what were some of those activities or maybe violations of some of those security of those streaming services? For example, when Disney Plus first started, Disney was actually breached at the onset of the inception of Disney Plus, and most recently Roku was hacked a few months ago. And I don't know if people are aware, but HBO was hit with a class action lawsuit recently alleging that it shares their subscribers' information with Facebook. When people were on Facebook searching, they used that when they were on HBO searching for what to watch, they would share that information with Facebook and vice versa. And apparently they got sued over it, which brings me to my next point. We're looking at a milestone, perhaps. You got Disney, Warner Brothers, Discovery. They're teaming up to bundle with Disney Plus, Hulu, and HBO Max, or Max as it's known as. So if you're getting all those companies together, how concerned should consumers be with their privacy or their data?
Truthfully, no more concerned than they already are. I'm sure these companies will all share data back and forth, but to be honest, whether through third parties or even with each other on accident or on purpose, it already happens. I don't know if I could really say that the security would be any better of all of these companies coming together than it would be if they were all separate. If I'm being realistic, it's just because it's a larger team worrying about security doesn't necessarily mean it's better or worse for that matter.
So it's safe to say the same level of security threat either way?
I would say there's more risk considering that there are more gyms in the background and more people would say, hey, I'd like to attack this conglomerate streaming service rather than, you know, one of the major ones. It'll be the major one to hit. So, probably more risk as it's a larger target. But at the end of the day, I don't imagine them specifically saying, oh, we're going to beef up security, we're going to change these types of protocols and processes. It'll probably just be merged, that way it barely works on the operational side, and the security is just still whatever it was before. I just don't think much would change.
From a hacker standpoint, when you're going in to perhaps breach an organization, would you rather do maybe a small business? And I'm thinking perhaps maybe the small business doesn't have those sort of security checks in place because of maybe monetary reasons as a big corporation, or because it's a big corporation, maybe they're not watching as much, or like you said, it doesn't make a difference, but as the bad guy, which would you prefer?
So there are different levels of hackers, to be honest. I know we all think of them as just, you know, one type of attacker going for any and every little thing. But to be honest, there are many different types of hackers and different types of threats, right? Some attackers may not, we may think of them as hackers, but they're not actually doing anything too technical. They might just search for data on the dark web, buy it with a little bit of money, and then they will then try all of these passwords that they've got. This is what's known as credential stuffing, which actually happened in one of the Roku attacks. I say one of the Roku attacks because Roku was attacked, and they were breached in March and April, actually. So that was a pretty big thing. But point is, some people, they just go and buy all of the leaked data from a different breach, and then they say, oh, sweet, now I have these usernames, passwords, emails, sometimes credit card numbers or social security numbers or anything extra. And then, and maybe even security questions, the list goes on. And then they just try those emails on different services. They try those passwords and usernames and other things I mentioned on different services, and it's not really all too technical. That can happen, right? Now, there are also more advanced attackers that do have technical skills and aptitude. These people are going to understand maybe website exploits or things like that. They will do deeper reconnaissance to see, hey, what kind of database is this running in the background? What kind of framework is this using? And those people are going to be a lot more serious. Those people are going to go for a larger scale companies typically, because the small ones, they're too easy, they're too simple, to be honest. They may hit the small ones, but if they have that level of skill, they're typically going for the larger companies. And
is
then,
there a challenge reason? Because you mentioned that they may not go for the smaller ones. Is it because they said, like, this is just too easy, I just won't bother? Is it more that?
In a weird way, think of it as being overqualified for a job. Let's say you have 10 years of experience in whatever your field may be. You're not applying for entry-level roles, right? You know you'll get them, but they won't really yield you as much money as you might want.
And it might be boring.
Yeah.
Disinterested or disconnected.
Right, exactly. And if nothing else, it's not going to yield you the pay that you want for the amount of experience that you have. So if you have that level of experience, you're going to go for more, you know, mid-level and senior roles. Think of it the same way as this. If you have all of these hacking skills, or, you know, you're a more advanced attacker, right? You're probably going to go for more advanced opportunities to steal money or data or whatever you may be after. So typically you don't see high-level threat actors going for small businesses, but it does happen, actually. It does happen.
Because we've seen some big ones. I mean, you and I have had discussions. Colonial Pipeline last year, for example, I mean, that was a big deal. You're talking about people's oil and affecting gas prices. So I imagine that would be one of your high-level people that you're referring to.
Yeah, and those people were it was confirmed that that group was pretty advanced in its techniques and all of that. Fun fact about that, those threat actors actually came out and apologized. You hardly ever see that, by the way. It's talking about Colonial Pipeline.
They were sorry.
Yeah. They actually came out and they apologized. They said, to be honest, we only wanted money. They said, we just wanted, you know, the, I think, 5 Bitcoin or something like that. But yeah, they said, we only wanted, you know, a couple $1 million. We didn't expect to create a world crisis. They said, we didn't want the politics behind this. Yeah, so they actually did apologize
okay,
for the commotion.
People, you're hacking an oil.
Yeah. But I don't know.
What
that's
do you expect
just.
Is gonna happen?
You rarely ever see these types of groups come out and apologize. So I just always think that's really interesting. But I'm very sure it was that group that said, oh, we're sorry about this. We just wanted the money, not the commotion.
Well, at least they had a conscience.
Something like that.
Something like that.
But yeah, so anyways, though, there are different levels of attackers, and for that reason, they may go for different types of businesses, and not all attackers are financially motivated, believe it or not. Some go for finance, some go for data, some go to make people look bad, some are more of a political ideology or an agenda. Those have a cool name. It's hacktivism and hacktivists and all that kind of stuff. It depends. Right? You know, somebody may not like Disney's stance on a certain political topic, and so they're going to shoot for them specifically. My point is, though, because of that, you can't really boil it down to, oh, are hackers going to go for small businesses? Are hackers going to go for large businesses? The answer is yes. It just depends on how advanced they are.
You're right, because it does run the gamut. You know, like we said, Colonial Pipeline, you talk about streaming services, phone companies, mm-hmm. banks.
And to be honest, these attackers are more sophisticated than you might think. What a lot of people probably imagine is, you know, the very stereotypical black hoodie person in their basement, or maybe, you know, people meeting up to do all of this kind of stuff somewhere, and then, okay, we're going to hack this company. What it really looks like is maybe a little bit of that, but now these are entire companies with office buildings that have, you know, fronts as their actual name or activities, and on top of that, you have the operators who actually do the attacking, right? You have developers who develop the malware that the operators then use. And then you also have more of the, I don't want to say hospitality, but more of the, basically the communicators, right? Of basically a call center that says, hi, welcome to Ransomware Incorporated. Who are, which company are you and what's your ID and who will you be paying right now? And literally many ransomware operators and hostage ransomware negotiators.
They have a customer service.
Yes, line. They've talked about how it's a customer service line, right? So my point is these groups are actually pretty disjointed. I think it was Lockbit or someone else, may not be Lockbit, I'm not sure. But there was recently an example of malware developers and malware operators not paying. They didn't pay the operators, so they ran away with all the money. Right?
Ooh, ouch.
Mm-hmm. So my point is, you may see it as all one big organization doing this to you, but to be honest, it's subcontracting crime, cybercrime. It's very, very sophisticated at this point, and it's not just, you know, a small team of people in a basement. It's an entire wing of a company that's not really doing what they actually say they are.
What's been doing about it? What are we doing about it?
What are we doing about it? There are various, like I just said, ransomware negotiators who, if nothing else, they try to get the price down. Of course, don't pay the ransom. For places like hospitals or larger profile companies and all that, sometimes this is almost unavoidable.
I was going to ask you about hospitals because...
Yes.
You got life or death, literally.
Right, and oftentimes, while yes, the official says don't pay the ransom, it's a ransom, it just encourages them to do it again. I'm not going to lie. When you have life or death on the table, sometimes paying the ransom is the quickest way to have a chance at making sure that these systems get back and up and running again. So it is a case-by-case basis, right? But in other cases, though, what are we doing about this? One, there are your ransomware hostage negotiators. There are plenty of government officials like the FBI working on these types of things. I know the FBI is tracing a lot of this, a lot of different ransomware groups. I'm focusing on ransomware just because it's really, really big and popular. There are other cyber attacks and breaches and things like that, but yeah, you typically see ransomware type stuff. Of course, some of the biggest and best cybersecurity companies in the world are trying to focus on this, really doing high-level threat intelligence of, oh, an attribution. Hey, where is this coming from? Is this a Russian coding style? Is this a Chinese technique or something like that? Can we trace the VPN connections? All of those types of different things are a huge, huge help in trying to figure out not only how this is being done to stop it, but also who is doing this.
Where it's coming from.
Right. And oftentimes, even if it is found out where it's coming from, these may be in countries that the United States does not have an extradition treaty with. So it gets even more complicated of, you know, exactly who's doing it, exactly where they are, what they're doing, when they're going to do it next. But you can't legally arrest them, right? So then you have some people and even some companies that cyber attack the cyber attackers, and they hack the hackers back. And it's literally counterintelligence. It gets very, very complicated to answer the question of what we're doing about it, right? Because you have to pull in legal, you have to pull in the technical people, you have to make sure that you're pointing the finger at the right group or person. So. Yeah, and it gets even more complicated because some of these groups pretend to be other groups, right? Because if hacker group A pretends to be hacker group C, right? Well, then we all point the finger at hacker group C and they say, hey, we didn't do this. Somebody else is framing us and all that kind of stuff.
It had nothing to do with it. If I were a criminal, I would go to one of these countries where there's no extradition to where I would be safe.
Right, exactly. So they make sure that they're stationed in a country that, and in a country that the victim country cannot.
You can't do anything.
Arrest them if they are found out. But yeah, it's a complicated story, honestly, about what we're doing. But we are trying our hardest on behalf of the cybersecurity community. It's a lot. just try to keep up with them.
With us today is offensive cybersecurity researcher Shadow. Shadow, I know a lot of times companies, they may have been hacked months before it hits the public. What is the reason behind that? Why would a company wait? Why would they just come out and say, hey, listen, your information has been breached. Here's what we're trying to do about it.
Money. Be honest. I mean, if you being under the threat of a cyber attack, it's really damaging to your brand, right? And to be honest, most of the time, there are some times where companies have poor cybersecurity hygiene and posture, and it leads to them being attacked. But oftentimes, it's in this age, it's unavoidable, right? Even some of the best and most mature companies, some even cybersecurity companies themselves, get attacked, right? But it is up to them to make sure that they report it, not just to hold all the money in their pockets and say, oh, okay, we're not going to look bad, so our quarter two ratings look better, profile looks a lot better, stronger than it actually is. But yes, this now gets into responsible disclosure on the company side. And many are actually calling for legislation to make sure that these companies have a fixed time period of when they know they're breached to when they must report and how they report, and show the show not only how they report, but what that may impact for the customer's data or anything like that. It's
absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and sometimes the consumer may be able to make some type of adjustments. I remember a couple years ago in Home Depot, it was breached because people were using their debit and credit cards, and that's how they got to it. So as a consumer knowing that, I'd be like, okay, well then I do need this hammer, so I'll pay cash. Yeah. So that they can't do it. But me not knowing that, I'll continue to use my debit card, and they'll continue to do what's done
in right.
those type of situations.
But yeah, promoting the culture of admitting that you were breached, attacked, or anything that may lead to any kind of compromise, whether of your client's data, your data, et cetera, is a really big push right now. It has been a big push in the last 10 years of basically saying, hey, it's okay to come out and say, we were attacked. Here's a bit about why or how, here's who this affects, here's how it affects that group, because it helps all of us at the end of the day, right? It helps the companies, it helps other companies who are in your industry as well, if they have similar infrastructure, similar problems, similar, I call them the crown jewels of the network, and that can be various things as far as maybe it could be trade secrets, you know, client lists, just personal data, or of course money itself, right? But yeah, so promoting that culture of sharing when there is a cyber incident is extremely important.
I would like to revisit the AT&T security breach. There's a lot of a number of lingering questions to that. First of all, just to kind of go back and kind of remind people what happened with it. When that first came about, first of all, AT&T did deny it, that this wasn't happening, when in fact, it had been going on for quite some time, probably some of the reasons that you just mentioned.
I remember it was very obvious because everyone on the dark web could already see all the credentials being sold, and they were verified as real. So there was a big file on the dark web that was going around of basically customer data, first name, last name, email, credit card information, et cetera, and just it kept going on, right? And people were like, hey, this is verified AT&T data, right? Everybody knew that it was real because a lot of things on there, they're not. And then when they came out and publicly said it was fake, everyone said, it's really easy to find. It was so easy to find. I actually looked it up myself just to see if it was real, and it was.
I was going to ask you about that. Is there a way that people can go to find their information that's out there that's been compromised?
So I would strongly advise against going to the dark web yourself, especially if you're non-technical, as it is very dangerous in multiple ways. There are not all websites have to adhere to any kind of local rules and regulations or laws. There are things on there meant to trick you, and honestly, outside of hacker forums, which is why I go there, because I'm really interested in what threat actors are talking about, and I have seen instances in where threat actors and forums are saying things, and then the next week it's on the news, and I'm like, oh, that is real. there is, of course, a lot of horrible, uncensored content that doesn't need to be in anyone's face on the dark web. It's for the layperson, I definitely wouldn't suggest going there. However, there is a really, really great website specifically called Have I Been Pwned? Pwned being spelled P-W-N-E-D, haveibeenpwned.com, and where you can actually enter your email address. It is safe. I hope the website itself doesn't get attacked. That would be horrible.
There's that.
Yeah, yeah. But basically, once you put in your email address, then it will pull up all of the breaches that are associated with that email address. And I've been using this personally for, I think, the last 10 years, to be honest, yeah. Of just looking, oh, great, my private email address is in a new breach. Oh, my private email address is in this new breach and stuff like that. And it will typically give you a pretty good idea of where these attackers are getting your passwords, right?
Yes, and you showed it to me,
mm-hmm.
and thank you for that. And yes, I do have an idea of kind of...
And you saw how many different breaches your email is associated
just
with,
from your
right?
email.
Exactly.
And you notice whenever you sign up for stuff, they always ask... Well, just always, but most of the time they ask for your email.
They do, email, like, phone friends. Number, some kind of identifier. Yeah. And, you know, that'd be completely fine if they weren't selling it. But
there's that.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. They will sell your information to third parties and then wonder why there's a problem. Now, AT&T, for them, there's an Ohio man that did file a class action lawsuit against them. They're accusing the telecommunications company of not protecting consumer data. So we see what comes out with that lawsuit.
You know, I actually have a personal story about this. You showed me this. There was a tool released by a cybersecurity company, Malwarebytes, that was very similar to Have I Been Pwned, but it was only for the AT&T leak, right?
Right.
So you could go to Malwarebytes' website. I don't know if this still exists, but you could go to their website, put in your email address, and see if you were impacted by the AT&T leak, which is pretty useful. And again, all this was they downloaded that file, and they made sure that it was protected, and they said, okay, if we're going to look up, you know, using code, we're going to look up your email address and see if you are impacted, right? Now, personally, I've never been a customer of AT&T. No problem with them. It's just that's not who I use my cell carrier or anything like that for telecom. However, I use the tool myself just to see, you know, if it had anything with my personal email. And it pulled up data about me. Now, it didn't say, hey, we got this from... Now, it pulled up certain data about me. And I know that this data was from a third party that sold the information that I gave it to AT&T. And I know this for sure because I use very specific fake data for that service that I signed up for. And when I saw that fake data, I put in like a stupid birthday or something like that, like a year that I was not born in, just, you know, because why do they need to know that for sure, right?
Right.
And when I saw that year come up, because I only use that year for that service.
For that particular incident.
And I saw it come up, I said, wow. So now I know that not only AT&T bought this data, but the company that I signed up with sold it to AT&T and possibly others, right? And so it made me think, wow, I'm not an AT&T customer and now I'm impacted by this. Now, I'm pretty lucky because I didn't use my actual birthday to sign up for that service in the event of something like this happening. Call it me being super paranoid, but at least it paid off, right? But for those who do use that service, for those who do use, you know, other third-party services that sell data to AT&T, now their actual birthday, now their actual email or something like that is now in AT&T's hands, which was poorly protected.
Which is why I wanted to revisit this story, because media was reporting that 73 million current and past AT&T customers were affected by the attack,
mm-hmm.
leaving the impression that, oh, okay, if I wasn't a former or current AT&T customer, I'm good. But according to what you just said,
yep.
not so fast.
I would, I don't know if the page on Malwarebytes.com is still up. But if it is, I would encourage even non-AT&T customers to go and put in their email, their private email, just like haveibeenpwned.com, put in that private email and see if it comes up related to AT&T data. And I think some of you may be surprised, to be honest, because, again, I have never been a customer of AT&T. I am still not a customer of AT&T, but somehow, and I'm pretty sure I know how, they got my data.
And this probably would not encourage you to be a customer. And just so people know, this, and it really wasn't this prevalent, but we're talking about something that actually was impacted starting in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just now getting around to talking about it. And just like currently, as they did then, it was like, well, don't look at us. And I remember distinctly this time around, AT&T said, well, it was something we're working on, some type of upgrade and all this stuff. I personally called them and asked them, like, nope, there's no breach. I don't know what you're talking about. And I think within a week, it all hit the media.
Yep. What was actually going on. That's how they do. There is no war in Ba Sing Se until there is. But yeah, exactly. So like you just said, this had been going back to 2019. So it does make me wonder, right? That's 5 years, right? It does make me wonder, hey, in 2029, what breach will we be talking about that had been going on since 2024, right?
Precisely.
In any company. It could be any company of any industry, you know? One of these conglomerate streaming companies, you know, any kind of social media, banking, another telco company, it could be anything, right? So for that reason, it does make me think, hey, I need to be very wary about who I give my data to and who I give my correct data to. Because there are some services, they don't need to know your exact birthday or even your name. You can use a fake name as long as you remember it to sign in for
in
a lot
cases,
of things.
Right, they just want to make sure you're 18 or something like that.
Yep.
You know, or some of the drinking websites, make sure you're 21.
Right, and even for social media websites, specifically with COPPA, what is it, Child Online Protection Act? So I'm missing one of the P's. But yeah, basically though, they're only making sure that you're 13 or older, right? So why does it matter if you put that you were born in, you know, 1900, right? Okay. Fine. Okay. Yeah, I'm 120.
I'm over 15.
I'm 124. Right. So exactly. I'm over 13. I'm 124. So don't even worry about it. No, it's not foolproof because I guarantee there is another more important site, like probably your bank, that you shouldn't lie to about your data.
Yeah, don't do that.
Exactly.
Or that, the IRS. Or
yeah, don't people. Don't do that. No. So you know, use that fake data trick sparingly, but. At the same time, there is probably some company on the internet or multiple companies that do have your real data, and it only takes for one of them to be attacked for it to be all correlated back to the real you.
Oh, and to be a good insurance agent here, if you are applying for insurance, please use your correct date of birth.
Right, right.
In that instance.
You know, it's the whole common sense thing, but yeah, that's one thing that I like to do. It probably isn't foolproof. I guarantee that if someone looked me up and spent enough time and energy, they could find out lots of information about me that I wouldn't want them to know, right? Same's true for you and anyone else listening to this. But
and to be fair, I just want to, you know, to point out that, you know, a lot of these companies do try to make sure they put in protections to protect their customers. And, you know, just sometimes you just outsmart it. The people, you have people that all day long, all they do is try to figure out a way to get into a system.
That's exactly what I do as my role, right? I actually look into these types of companies, you know, after they ask, and they say, hey, how would an attacker do something like this to us, right? And so from the outside looking in, I then gather enough information and attack them just like these threat actors do. And from there, I then give them a strong report and say, hey, this is the kind of thing you want to turn off, or this is the type of thing that you don't want to be public knowledge or something like that. And once I've hacked them and shown them how easy it may be or even how difficult it may be, I then give them security recommendations and kind of flip to the other side, right? Conversely, I also do the incident response side of, hey, there's actively someone attacking you. Let's make sure we log them out. Let's make sure we know where they've been on the forensics type of side of, okay, where have they been? So we can report the higher-ups and eventually report to the customer. This is what we know they do have. This is what we know they don't, right? So that way we know how large of an impact this breach may be. That, and again, that's where I come in. That's where people like me come in. So yes, these companies are doing all they can, and if they aren't, then they can still, if they can't, then that's where they contract cybersecurity companies.
Well, if one of these companies are listening, or if someone wants more information on what to do if they've been compromised, they want to reach out to you, how do they find you?
Sure. They can find, honestly, you can just Google S Shadow. That's going to be S-S-H-A-D-0-W. And you can email me at shadow@protonmail.com. Honestly, yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's everywhere. So.
Could you repeat that email address?
Yeah, it's, and again, this is all my usernames everywhere. It's just going to be S-S-H-A-D-0-W. Yeah.
Shadow, thank you for joining us today.
Of course, of course. Gotta put out more fires.
Within hours of breaking bread with our guest Shadow, we learned a leader of a Lockbit ransomware gang was arrested. The National Crime Agency, or NCA, reports the group, along with its affiliates, is responsible for attacking over 7,000 businesses. However, since the arrest, the group has been doing a lot less crime. Plus, those crimes recently been committed haven't hit the level of impact previously reported. The top five countries affected were the U.S., U.K., France, Germany, and China. The group is targeting hospitals, healthcare companies, and other victims. The investigation named Operation Kronos has significantly reduced Lockbit's threat, with affiliates facing law enforcement action. Additionally, victims are being offered support from the NSA, with over 2,500 businesses given support. We have a complete article posted on X and our Facebook page. Breaking Bread is a production of Artists for the People. Follow us on X at Breaking Bread 101. That's break, the letter N as in November, Bread 101. Or catch us on Instagram, Breaking Bread Podcast. Check us out on Facebook or visit our website, breakingbread.biz. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at Breaking Bread 101. Give us a listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Listen Notes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme music was composed by Ludwig van Beethoven. Breaking Bread was created by Terry Page. Success is when opportunity meets preparation. Until next time.